significant challenges facing our energy sector. I know you've talked about them. I know you've heard about them. Transitioning to a greener grid, that's going on. How fast is that going to happen? How fast does it need to happen? What kind of costs will we incur through all that? You also look at the dam breaching proposals, which is a part of that. Challenges with sage grouse, and then just plain old challenges with reliable and affordable electricity. We are here to talk about all those things, and here happens to be in Nashville, Tennessee, site of the Power Exchange, the National Rural Electric Cooperative Association. This is where 900 co-ops from across the country, and that represents thousands and thousands of members. That represents you, Montana, because we are definitely a co-op state. We're here to solve, or at least discuss and path or chart out paths. They are here for that. We're here to cover it. We're here to talk about it. Welcome. It's From Montana for Montana from Nashville, Tennessee. Tom Schultz, we're live on Voices of Montana, two decades strong and working on three. I hope you've had a good weekend. We're going to get right into it here because there's a lot to talk about. Chris Christensen is going to join us a bit later on. You folks know him along the High Line from Norval Electric. The folks here across the country know him as well because he's the president of this national organization, the only Montanan to date, I will say, that is leading this and at a pretty critical time as well for our co-ops. Sean Taylor is going to join us a bit later on. He is our neighbor from the south, from Wyoming. We'll talk about some of those issues. Sage grouse, I think, is a big one there. And then Gary Weems joins us as we kick this program off, the CEO of the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Gary, how you doing?
Good, Tom. Good to be here with you in Nashville. It's pretty interesting city. Lots of great music here.
Yeah, there is, isn't there?
Yeah.
This is my first time here, so I'm a little bit taken back by it.
Incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you for being here. I appreciate that.
You bet.
A lot of Montana members here.
Yeah. Yeah. We have I think it's got to be one of the bigger turnouts we've had, and a lot of it's because of Chris becoming the president. We're going to honor him this week at a reception actually tonight. So they really want to host and show off Montana and that type of thing. So
I think as I'm talking to a lot of members here, and they're very friendly, and they'll talk about their co-ops from Alabama, Washington State, Georgia.
Yeah.
We share a lot of the same values, I think, which is important. And Chris, I think, exemplifies those values.
Yeah, he really does. I think he's, Tom, really the perfect person to lead our national association at this time. You know, we're getting back. This is the first in-person annual meeting nationally that we've held in 2 years. And so we've kind of lost relationships, mm-hmm. and that is so integral to the success of our national organization, our state, and everything. But nationally, we've got to have those relationships. And Chris is so good about relationship building. He's he's a very engaging person. He's got a folksy personality, very humble. And his theme that he's focusing on as president is education. And that really has to do a lot with relationships, believe it or not, because, you know, in my view, education involves actively listening to someone. You try to understand where they're at, and that results in a better relationship. And we're all about relationships as electric cooperatives because we're grassroots driven, and the policymakers know that, and it's important to them.
Well, and Chris, common sense approach as well. I have trouble finding common sense in some of the proposals that are out there regarding our energy sector. What is Chris going to bring in that regard? You talked about his values. What is he going to bring policy-wise?
Well, I mean, he understands that we're all about basically keeping the lights on at a price that's affordable for our people. You know, we serve in rural counties. A lot of the counties that we serve in nationally, it's just a large percentage of the counties that are persistent poverty counties. So affordability is very critical for our electric co-ops. And so Chris is very focused on that. Our speaker, we have our keynote speaker who's speaking right now. We actually had him at our annual meeting in Montana, Robert Bryce. Mm. And he talks about the importance of that and how that actually drives the success of a country is the success of its electric utility industry. If we have wealth, if we have electric utility delivery that's affordable, our nation will become wealthy and will stay wealthy, and that's so critical. And so Chris is you know, he brought in Robert. He really thought he was a good speaker and believes he is going to be effective in that. So, yeah, I think, you know, Chris understands the realities out there. He serves in a small rural co-op. And in Valley County, same county I grew up in, Glasgow area. And so he understands the realities of what people face out there.
Yeah, it's a good choice. And he's got a lot of challenges in front of him as well. And how important is this conference then? Like you said, absent for a couple of years at this time. What's the significance of this?
Yeah, so if you look at the name of this conference, I think it's a really cool name because it really captures in a nutshell what we're all about. It's called Power Exchange. So it, you know, look at the word power. Obviously, we're all about power. That's what we're focused on. And then exchange. So, you know, we're going through changes, tremendous amount of changes. You know, we've got, you know, government pushing for more and more carbon-free generation. We've got, you know, new technologies coming on board. We've got, you know, new opportunities for grants thanks to the infrastructure bill that got passed by Congress. And so there's lots of change. And then exchange. So this conference is all about, like I said earlier, about relationship building. And so this conference has 26 interactive sessions. So that means people are going to get to not just hear, but they're going to get to talk about what they face in response to some of the things that are going to be covered during this conference.
There's a couple of them here that I noted that I'll be taking in today. The one about from policy to practical, cooperatives thriving in an energy transition.
Yeah.
Do you think why is, for me, that's important because are the cooperatives being overlooked in this energy transition?
Well, they are. And you know, we don't, for example, here's the thing. One of the things is there's these tax credits are available that government has for years, federal government made available to the electric utility industry. But guess what? We can't take advantage of those tax credits because we're not for profit. We're all focused on service. And so what we want to see changed in Congress is say, let us have, you know, access to that direct pay for these things. So, you know, direct pay for carbon capture, direct pay for doing solar development, that type of thing. Basin Electric's doing a big solar farm, but they can't own it directly. They have to do it through a contractor. That actually wastes money, a lot of money, according to Basin Electric. So direct pay from the government, for example, would allow us to directly access that capital and do more and more cleaner, greener things, that type of thing.
Gary Weens is with us, CEO of the Montana Electric Cooperative Association, live in Nashville at this Power Exchange. Sean Taylor's going to join us. We'll talk about some common ground. He's from Wyoming. Chris Christensen also a bit later on. You know, as these changes come upon us here, you know, it creates some opportunities. You talked a little bit about some of these funding programs.
Yeah.
There's going to be opportunities in the infrastructure bill.
Yeah.
Jim Matheson, the president of the national organization, CEO of the national organization, had talked about maybe taking a different approach. Maybe have some coalitions of 100, 200, 300 co-ops together. Is that something that you think would benefit Montana?
Yes. In fact, we have some co-op managers in Montana. One of them is right over here, and Park Electric, and they are getting together, this group of managers, because they see the opportunity with electric vehicle charging stations for the development of that. And so they have formed a group, and they are working with the Montana Department of Environmental Quality's Energy Office, which is the ones that are going to sort of administer these grants. There's $43 million over the next 5 years that's coming down to Montana for development charging stations. And so they're going to get together and try to submit a collective grant application and try to get some of this money and work collectively as co-ops, because co-ops are all about working together with each other. And it's pretty exciting.
That's the foundation of the co-op model too.
Yeah,
as a matter of fact.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So you're going to try to maybe take advantage of that in a lot of those areas. And it'll take a little while for that money starts filtering down, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll see. We get six. The state gets six some million dollars this year.
Okay.
September or so is the deadline for sort of finalizing the rules, and then the grant applications later this fall, I believe, according to what sort of preliminary, but I think that's when we'll be able to start applying for that money for the first round for this year, and then another probably another $6 or $7 million next year, and so on.
Those are some of the opportunities, and we'll be exploring those as we go along too. I think there'll be some interesting news that comes out of that. The people that are going to get together and the ideas that they're going
to
share.
And we'd sort of like to, if we do this collective grant application, we are thinking it would be really exciting in Montana for the co-ops to have a brand. So when you stop to charge your vehicle in Montana, if you're out of state, you see the co-op name or whatever name we pick as a collective brand for that. And it reminds people the significance of co-ops and how they, you know, care about those rural areas and want to make sure you can drive your electric vehicle across the state.
How many co-ops in Montana? How many?
Yeah, we have 25 co-ops. We serve about 40% of the state's population. A lot of rural areas where, you know, we have only about 3 members per mile on average. There's lots of co-ops that have less than a member per mile. So it's a real challenge to keep the lights on and make the electricity affordable in those areas.
We like to hear that, but I laugh a little bit because we are pretty sparse around here, and it creates some problems. So there's opportunities and challenges here, too. We've got maybe a few minutes left. Some of those challenges that Montana is facing, we talked about a little while ago, the dam breaching. You guys are going to bring a proposal regarding sage grouse forward here as well. What's on your mind?
Yeah, the dam breaching right now is on our minds because there was a study done a couple years ago, exhaustive study, cost ratepayers $40 million. It was done by government agencies who run these dams, and they came to the conclusion that the risks of breaching these dams, shutting down this one of the lower Snake River dams we're talking about over in eastern Washington, but they're dependent on by our Western Montana co-ops.
Yeah.
The risks far outweigh the benefits. The worry is about the salmon, but if you look at the science, it isn't the dams that are causing the problem. It's the climate change, and that's evident by the warming of the oceans. Go up and down the coast and look at the rivers that have dams and don't have dams. They have they both have the same problem with salmon decline. So and we're working to spend money to protect the salmon and on those dams, but it's a challenge.
You and I chatted briefly, and it surprised me when they first started talking about breaching the dams. I thought that's a whacked out. Well, that's a extreme idea.
Yeah.
And I didn't think it was going to gain any momentum. And I'm surprised that there's momentum still behind this.
Yeah, there is. So right now, we understand the White House is requesting ordering the Bonneville Power Administration to do another study. So it's just going to,
They're shopping studies.
Yeah. Exactly. They're looking for their, we've got Senator Murray from Washington, who's going to request a study, another study, different one later on this year. And then we've got the Northwest Power and Conservation Council, which I think it's next week, is going to vote on whether to do their own study. Yeah. So they're just thinking that eventually they'll find something in one of those three additional studies that's going to give them some leverage to be able to try to get these dams breached eventually. But it's a congressional decision, but it's getting scary.
Yeah, it is. We'll follow that. And the public needs to get involved there too. We've got less than 30 seconds. What do you want your members to get out of this meeting here?
I think what I want them to realize is that, you know, the electric co-ops are all about serving our people. That's what we're known for. That's what our reputation is in the legislature and in Congress, is that we're all about people. We're owned by our communities, and everything that we do, we look at new opportunities for solar, for wind, and all those things, battery storage, but it all has to be done with the consideration of affordability.
Yeah. Gary, I appreciate that. I look forward to chatting with you here further, probably looking across the room and seeing you at a session or two, and we'll talk more, and thank you for being here. Appreciate that.
Did you know that Stockman offers more than banking services? We also offer all lines of insurance, including home, auto, life, crop, farm, ranch, and business. At Stockman Insurance, our experienced agents will take the time to work with you to design the right insurance package to meet your specific needs at competitive prices. Contact us today for a free quote. Stockman Insurance, Montana's brand of insurance. Equal opportunity employer and provider.
There goes the national president, and he's on a pretty good pace, right?
Yeah, he is. He's got to get back up there, I think.
All right. Sean Taylor joins us. Sean, Tom Schultz, thanks for being here, man.
You bet. Nice to meet you. Thanks for
appreciate
having
that.
Me.
You know Gary, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
hey, Sean.
I'm glad you do, because he seems to think he knows you by the amount of you know, dust he was talking. Okay. Wyoming. I guess I want to start with sage grouse because, you know, the Montana delegation is going to be bringing a proposal, which I presume that you'll support. You guys are probably dealing with it even more than any other state out there regarding that. What's the status?
Yeah, I agree. It's a huge issue and one that we've worked with Gary on and the folks at the Montana co-ops for the past probably 5 years. I think we got both states to a really good place in our state plans and having to deal with the grouse. And we've seen, I think our bird numbers have stayed steady, gone up a little bit, maybe not to the liking of everybody, but you know, these plans coming out of the DC that could bifurcate our state plans is very concerning. So I appreciate, you know, Gary and Chris and the folks of Montana bringing the resolution up for consideration at our meeting today.
Well, in I just want to say that in what Montana did when they decided to start developing their own sage grouse management plan is they looked to Wyoming and modeled it largely after Wyoming's, which was successful and has proven successful in Montana.
You've learned probably more about sage grouse than anybody has out there. I have too in studying this, and their cycles are very trending, you know, up and down. Talk about your plan. Talk about the plans together that you think are going to be successful in fending off the call for endangered species listing.
Well, I can give you one example in Wyoming that's just our legislature is considering today, as a matter of fact, and it's basically call it a bird farm, sage grouse bird farm, and you know, going out to the leks and getting eggs and bringing them, you know, taking them from the wild into a more controlled environment. The bill that they're discussing is that this was going to sunset and you wouldn't be able to do that anymore. But we haven't had enough time to prove that it works. Because like the cyclical nature of once we get them back into the wild. And so the bill is to remove that sunset so we have a better, you know, we can take a longer-term view of how to protect the birds in a, you know, completely different way, right? Not just in the wild, but if we can raise them and then, you know, reintroduce them, get the numbers back up, that's what we're hoping for.
How will it hinder your job if that bird is listed?
Well, it won't hinder my job, but the job of my members and our co-ops, absolutely. I mean, we did have one example with one of our co-ops having to get a right-of-way, and because it was close to a lek, they weren't able to, even though the state of Wyoming's Department of Transportation had a right-of-way right there, and they weren't able to get that right-of-way, and you'll see that just blow up if, you know, if the bird were to go go on the list. We wouldn't be able to get rights of ways, you know, take a long time. You'd have to spend a lot of money on studies, and it would be really hard. And you know, in growth areas, that's just going to get harder and harder. I mean, we don't have a whole lot of growth areas in Wyoming like y'all do up in Montana, but it'd just make it nearly impossible.
Gary, I want to have you follow up on that.
Yeah, well, in Montana, we, you know, well, just like Wyoming, but we have, it's a flexible program. So you pay for mitigation if you're going to do a power line or whatever, but it allows you to do different things like, you know, get credits for like bearing lines and so forth, that type of thing. Like Beartooth Electric did that, spent, I think, $150,000 or something like that to bury some power lines. And so that flexibility allows you to still get the power to people, because that's what we're all about, just getting power to people, but protects the bird.
How's the transition in Wyoming from where we're at now to a cleaner energy source? We've talked a lot on this program, Sean, and you and I have just met. But we I feel that it's more political than it is science. It's than mathematical. I think we're trying to mandate ourselves into something, and it's going to throw that transition off. How is it in Wyoming right now?
No, you're exactly right. And the speaker in the room right now is talking exactly about that, where it's political decisions, not reality. And we've seen quite a bit of pushback in Wyoming on mandates, whether it not from necessarily from the state, any federal mandates for sure. But we've also had some proposed coal plant closures by our largest investor-owned utility there, Rocky Mountain Power. And our elected leaders have really pushed back on that. They're like, you're doing this for, you know, political reasons, not because it's practical. And what is that going to do to the reliability for folks in Wyoming? So we're seeing a lot of pushback And I think we always will. I mean, we produce a ton of coal in Wyoming, yeah. And we would like to keep doing that. We've seen a lot of investment, both on the dollar size and policy-wise, for carbon capture, utilization, and storage. Yeah. We've invested in the integrated test center just south of Montana up there in Gillette do research and development at scale on capturing CO2, turning it into something, beneficial use, or sequestering it. So I think that's we're looking more that route in Wyoming, of keeping our coal industry alive, doing whatever we can to clean it up along the way. And it happens organically. It doesn't really happen because of mandates.
Yeah. And you guys are kind of getting out there on the cutting edge. I got to take two, and then we'll come on back and talk more specifically. We have Sean Taylor with us from the Wyoming Rural Electric Cooperatives Association, and Gary Weens as well from MECA. Brian Bennett with headlines, and then back with more here from Nashville.
Just three words tell you everything you need to know. They tell you why we employ more than 2,000 workers at our factory in Virginia Beach, and why over 10,000 local steel dealers are putting battery power in the hands of Americans. Just three words. Made in America. Real steel. Find yours at steelusa.com. The majority of steel products sold in America are made in America of U.S. and foreign materials. Batteries and chargers are sourced internationally.
So, Sean, I appreciate you being here. We share an awful lot, that's for sure. But there are probably some differences. What's going on in Wyoming right now that we need to inform the public about, or that some of the issues that you guys are tackling?
Sure. We had a couple of issues before the legislature this year having to do with service territory protection. So the entire state of Wyoming, same in Montana, is divided up into service territories. We have 11 co-ops that serve in their certificated service territory, and then the investor-owned utilities have their territory as well. And that's our lifeblood. That's, we count on having that territory, so whenever somebody locates in there, it belongs to us. We serve them. They become members of the co-op. And every now and then we'll have a bad actor and it's mainly with large loads, large power loads, that either don't like the cost or the rate that the co-op will charge them. And again, our rates are naturally higher than our investor-owned utilities because of the density and miles per line and everything. So our rates are always going to be a little bit higher, but they're very competitive. But so we'll have a big power customer come in, and they're located in our service territory, but they get power from the neighboring utility, namely the investor-owned utility.
Yeah.
And so that erodes our service territory. And so we ran a bill this year to kind of put an end to that, or make that a law that you couldn't do that. Right now it's just a regulatory thing. It didn't ultimately pass, but we're going to study it over the next interim because it's a really big deal for us. And I'd say that's probably the one thing that we worked on hardest this go around, was protecting that service territory, excuse me.
Those things take a little while to get past. How long have you been working on this issue, and did you feel like you got a little bit more over the hump this time around?
Yeah, and as we were just talking off air, with a 20-day session, it's a huge deal, and it's hard to explain that in 20 days.
Yeah.
And so we're happy to take it to the interim so we can study a little bit more. We brought it this year because there was a pretty egregious example of a load in one of our co-op territories, and they built their own line out to the investor-owned utility, and that investor-owned utility served it, and we just kind of got sick of it, and so we said, let's run a bill, and so it got everybody's attention. And the fact that it didn't pass isn't, that's not the end of it for sure. We'll study this and bring to light over the coming year what a big deal it is.
In 30 seconds, what do you want your Wyoming members to take away from this conference?
Jim Matheson, he really opened up the conference really well. We do what we do, whether it's my job, the CEO of a small co-op or a large co-op, the directors, we do all of that for our communities, for the people that started us. And it might sound a little bit cheesy, but we're out here, learning about different things that we can take back home and, for the betterment of our community, not for the betterment of a company or a president or CEO. It's for the betterment of our communities, and that's always at the forefront of our.
I hear that a lot from all these members, because it is true. Sean, thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
Back with more here in a bit.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
Montana students, did you know you can explore college and career options while attending high school? Career and technical education courses provide opportunities for students from all backgrounds, from work-based learning to earning college credits in high school through dual enrollment. CTE can lead to high wages and in-demand career placement right here in Montana. For more information or to explore the 16 different career pathways, visit mus.edu.
Brought to you by the Office of the Commissioner of Higher Education.
We are here now with Chris Christensen. Guess what? Yeah, we've been talking about Chris a little bit, the president of this national organization. How you doing, Chris?
Hey, well, glad to be here, Tom. Thank you for this opportunity.
Yeah, thank you for being here. Good turnout. I mean, if you get 5,000 to 6,000 at a conference, you know, there's probably some pressure on that, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. This is a huge conference. People are so excited to be back together, you know, and it's not just the new normal, it's a regular normal. People are glad to be back without that mask on, and we're able to interact and affect each other in a positive way.
What do you think happened over those 2 years? Did people, in some areas, communication increased tremendously because it had to. In other areas, it might have fallen off.
You know, I like to think of what happened positive. What happened positive is we learned that we can still get the job done and we can do it remotely if we have to. We realize it's not the best way, but we know we can do it because we just proved that we can do it. And we need to never lose that. And we need to continue to have a small portion of that so we stay good at it.
The cooperatives, the very model, the foundation is to cooperate. And this is what you guys need across the country, too, because I think you're facing a lot of challenges I'm wondering if the electric cooperatives get overlooked, their input in some of these challenges as well. But what are some of the challenges that you see that need to be addressed here by this national organization?
You know, we've got a multitude of things that we're working on right now. You know, cybersecurity, especially with everything that's going on in the world right now, I mean, we've actually been threatened through cybersecurity for the grid system. We are doing whatever we can to protect that. I don't know if many people know this, but NRECA, they have a research division. I didn't know that when I came on. I don't mind admitting that.
Yeah.
But it's one of the best in the nation. In fact, the U.S. government just okayed two programs to go on, and one of them was the Essence program that is provided by NRECA. That's how good our guys are.
What is that program going to do?
Well, basically, they're setting up a program to where a computer program that when the grids are attacked, it tells us right away, and it tells us how to deal with that. And the government's interested in the way that we're doing that, so it's moving ahead.
You're also a director at Norval Electric there along the High Line. Are they thinking about? Are you guys thinking about cybersecurity? It's a pretty small co-op.
Every co-op is thinking about cybersecurity right now, and the people that the technology that's offered. But NRECA, they're leading the challenge to get us to the point where we have that, and they're making it available to every co-op. So we're dealing with that. There's lots of challenges. You know, I travel around. I've been speaking all over the country. People love to hear about Norval.
Oh,
they love the fact that we're 10,000 square miles of surface. I mean, that's bigger than some states. The thing that always makes people that come up and talk to me afterwards, I tell them we've got a 40-mile line with one person on it. You know, we've got less than one person per mile at our local co-op. That is unheard of in the rest of the world. They just don't realize. And then their question is, how did a guy like you from a small co-op like that end up in this position?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure I have the right answer for that.
How did that happen?
Yeah, well, you know, I had a next-door neighbor that came to me and said, you should run against me. He said, I think you'd do a good job. That doesn't happen in most industries.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I came on to Norval, and then I got to the state level. And I really like I like politics. I do. And when we traveled to the to Washington, D.C. a few times, and the gentleman that had the position before I did said, you enjoy this, don't you? And I said, yeah. And so he said, when I'm done, he says, would you be interested in running for my position?
Oh.
And I told him at the time, I said, you know, my son is a junior in college. I wouldn't be able to do it. He said, I'll wait till you're ready. And that doesn't happen very often. So I was able to get into that position. 3 years in, I'm one of those guys that speaks my mind. And I don't always say things exactly like I should say them, but I say the truth. And a couple of the guys came up to me and they said, you should run for the secretary treasurer position. And I did. I only had 3 years of experience at the time. I don't think anybody had been in there with less than about 10 years of experience.
Uh-huh.
But I was successful. And I don't know. My life's been, I've had a good life. I'll tell you, things happen for me, and I've always been lucky. But I've always had the support. I had the support of my family on it. I had the support of the Norval board. And I had the support of Montana. And that's what got me here.
I'm glad to hear that. You're speaking of your son, Chisholm's here as well. there's going to be a reception. There's always a president's reception, and you got him a gig.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, you bet. Well, Chisholm put out a CD last year.
It's good, yeah.
Yeah, and they featured him on the cover of the Montana magazine, and that really propelled him. And people, I mean, there was little old women were calling him because they read the magazine and ordering CDs from him.
Oh, nice.
You know, he back home, he was kind of the wedding singer.
Yeah.
But he's, right. his real skill is writing songs. And I mean, he's a tremendous songwriter. And that's what put him into this position. And I'm kind of hoping he doesn't gain too much success until I'm done with this position because I need him at home.
Right.
But he's very talented, as are all my kids.
You're still running the ranch, right?
He's still running the ranch.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're back home.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. I mean, he's going to be playing, by the way, just to get that out there, going to be playing at your reception tonight, him and his band, and that's we're looking forward to that too.
Yeah, I'm very excited about that.
FFA has been a big part of you and your teaching career. Education is one of your major themes. Talk about that.
Well, you know, I believe that the only way for directors to get onto their board and be the very best director and make the very best decisions that they can make is to be well educated. So when I came on this board, education's a big part of my life. I made sure that I wanted to propel people to have the opportunity. We actually invented a new system. We had two guys in Montana who had taken the technology course that is offered by NRECA 15 years ago.
Oh.
Now, of course, that wasn't relevant to today.
Right.
So what we did is I said, you know, as a teacher, we have to go back to college. We have to go back and learn. Every 5 years, we've got to get 6 credits. We need something similar to that for the co-ops. What they did is they came about with the gold standard, and people renew their credits on a regular basis now, and that has increased tremendously. And actually, one of the other things that was a catalyst was actually the whole COVID problem that we had. All of a sudden, the way to get educated was to get it online. So that just exploded for NRECA, and they did such a good job of providing that. You know, one of the things that my local co-op did is we said, we're going to require our new members to have the CCD. That is the first level of education. And they have to get that done in the first 3 years to remain on the board. So I've been talking about that quite a bit as I go on. And a lot of the people that have come up and talked to me, they not only did that, but they have required them to have the second degree and the third degree, and some of them are even tying it to the compensation that their directors get. So I'm really proud that I was a catalyst to make that happen.
What let's talk about leadership a little bit, because I'm seeing a lot of in these sessions that are geared toward creating young leaders or just improving leadership. What's the value of that?
Well, you know, we need more young people in the co-op world. Mm-hmm. I mean,
you're getting them too, aren't you?
We're getting them. Yeah, we're getting them. I'll tell you, one of the things that I've noticed is as I travel around is there is an abundance right now of female CEOs. I mean, that has exploded. And just in the last 3 years, I walk around, I talk, and I introduce myself to somebody. What do you do? Well, I'm so-and-so, and I'm the CEO of this organization. You know, before, it was kind of a mostly male.
Mm-hmm.
But now I've seen that explode. That's also good. Young people, the young people that are coming in, they're interested. People are becoming interested in being a part of their community again.
Yeah. And I was going to ask that. Do you think the co-op model and because everybody we talk to, just talk with Sean, just talk with Gary, they talk about we do this because our people need energy and we want to get them energy. It's a very simple value of service. You think that's part of it for the young people?
The co-op business model is so unique. You know, it provides an opportunity for people to have effect in their community. And everybody's there for the right reason. I mean, those directors aren't getting paid a whole bunch. They're there for the right reason.
Yeah.
And to draw those people in. And every co-op I know of is doing everything they can to draw in the young people to get that. You know, we got to have the experience from the old people, from the older people, for the people that have been there, the experience, but we also need the new ideas from the young people.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. What does leadership training then provide them, provide the national organization and those individual co-ops?
Well, you know, Tom, I think that one of the things that I provided and when as president of the national organization, I think when people look at me, they think, wow, anybody could do it.
Well, I know that's not true because it is a job. Leadership levels, okay, you're going to get a little bit of guff here from...
From Barrow, Alaska, members from Utilities...
Hello, from Barrow, Alaska.
You
right
bet,
there, Frederick.
You bet. Good to see you again.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think I met you before.
Yes, you did. Yeah.
I forgot exactly where...
Well, we're right here on the...
Sorry about the
No, it's okay, Lewis. Yeah, that's a live thing. I appreciate that.
Awesome, guys.
Nice.
Yeah, it's
out of my friends and family in Missoula.
Okay, friends. Frederick has friends and family in Missoula.
Yeah.
All right, we'll do that.
Well, we're right here on the walkway, but it's amazing. People come up and talk to me. You know, and as I give speeches, as I talk to people around, it's those stories from back home that resonate with people. It's been amazing to me just to be able to walk up and talk to anybody. And I've given enough. I've talked to enough places. You know, one thing I'd like to mention is I was just in St. George, Minnesota. I went and spoke to a group of employees. You know, usually you talk to directors or you talk to CEOs. I was invited to go over to St. George and talk to employees. Now, those guys were the engineers. They were the line superintendents and from a multitude of states there that surround that area. They had a guy come and talk to them about electric vehicles. A lot of times when the electric vehicles people talk to us, it's almost like an infomercial. You know, they're talking us into it. You get a guy from the EV world talking to engineers, they took that guy to task. Oh, man, I'll tell you what. That guy, and he had the information. He was amazing, actually.
Oh, good.
I can't think of his name right now. But there's positives and there's negatives, and there are hurdles to jump over if we're going to get into the EV thing. And you talked about the things that are NRECA is working on. Boy, we've got a whole system that's working on that. The other big thing is broadband. You know, broadband is just huge, and we have hired people because broadband, you know, it was so, we talk about the way that electricity came into these small communities and what that did for especially, you know, washing machines, the things that, the change that it made. Well, now those same people are saying, hey, you co-ops, you were able to do the impossible. You brought electricity out to the end of the line. Now we want you to do the same thing with broadband. And we're doing, we got the hubs, we got everything out there. All this infrastructure bills that have come through, I think there's 27 different avenues with that that we're addressing right now. So we can provide the information that people need to make that advance into broadband, into infrastructure, with all of that through the co-op.com hub that we're putting together.
I'm
so proud of that.
Jim Matheson, he was the CEO, and we'll carry that interview tomorrow, but he had talked about this infrastructure funding, it's going to be a competitive bidding process.
Sure it is.
Maybe creating these consortiums, these coalitions of 100, 200, 300 co-ops to try to win this. Is that a good thing? Do you like that?
I like that.
I bet.
It's a great thing. You know, I don't know how many people know this, but there are, this is the largest service organization, energy organization in Washington, D.C. We have 4.2 million people that get their electricity from co-ops. In Montana, basically a million people, 400,000 get theirs. It's almost identical. So 400,000 people, you know, roughly 40% of the people get their electricity. We, from a political standpoint, from a force, we have a lot of power. And the other thing that's really interesting that I'm so proud of with NRECA is when we go talk to somebody on the Hill, they trust us. We've told them the truth for so long that they trust us.
Say that again.
We just do. They trust.
Yeah.
That's the main thing that we have is trust. That experience, that long-standing, if the co-op says it, if the electrical co-op say it, if Jim Matheson goes up there, if I go up and talk, they know we're not pulling their leg. We're not trying to do something political. We're telling them what back home wants to have happen.
Man, you can't put a price on that.
You can't. You can't.
Well, we got just, I'm probably out of time here. What do you want your Montana members to take away from this meeting?
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm just so proud of Montana. Montana has given me so much support. When I go back to Washington, D.C., there is someone from Montana that is a leader in every aspect of it. Montana is so well respected. I mean, I hope I never heard that, but Montana is very well respected. We have great people in Montana, and they have been a force at the national level. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate the support of Montana.
Well, I'll be honest with you. You're setting the bar high. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate
that.
Chris Christensen, who's the president of the National Rural Electric Cooperative Association. We're here at the Power Exchange. We'll take a short break and come on back and close it out here from Nashville, Tennessee, after this.
The strength of Montana's electric cooperatives is its member owners. When the time comes to let lawmakers know how a proposed bill could impact electric co-ops, they need to be able to call on you. Please consider joining the grassroots team at voicesforcooperativepower.com to ensure the electric cooperative voice is a loud one when it needs to be heard. That's voicesforcooperativepower.com. A message from your Montana electric cooperatives. They do more than keep the lights on for you.
Well, just enough time to line up who's going to be on the program tomorrow. I've mentioned this before. Did get a chance to speak with Jim Matheson. He's a national leader of the organization. And that was yesterday, so that's a recorded interview. We had him scheduled for Tuesday, but something came up in that regard. But we did get a chance to speak with him, and I think you'll really enjoy that, as much as I enjoyed speaking with Chris Christensen as well. And I think you can tell. And I believe this as well, and I do say from Montana for Montana for a reason. As he said, you go to Washington, you go anywhere, and you'll see people who have grown up in Montana in leadership roles in a lot of places. And I think that's because we value those things that he had expressed, the honesty about it, and just a common sense approach. I know I'm patting every Montanan on the back an awful lot, but I think you all deserve it. We're going to speak with Gretchen Boardman tomorrow from Big Flat Electric. Dee Dee Isaac's going to be here as well. She's the president of our Montana Electric Cooperative Association. And then Jim Matheson on the program as well. My thanks to Eric Young in studio. We've got more to come. Follow us on the Northern News Network. Take care.